For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
For new folks, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher at Ancient Dragon Zengate, and I'm very happy to have giving the talk this morning Roy Wyman, who's our Eno, or head of the Meditation Hall, and a board member, and has been Eno since the beginning of the year, and will be transitioning, relocating to Tennessee, to Knoxville, next month. So Laurel Ross will be our new Eno sometime next month, and Nyozon is our head Doan as of now, and we have various other transitions I'll talk about in the announcements afterwards, but Roy has been a wonderful pillar of our community, and will be here through parts of next month, but is giving the talk this morning, so thank you very much, Roy.
Thank you. Nice to see everybody here today. I thought I would talk about the Dharma Gate of Pain. One of those fun topics. Right with Taigen, possibility of talking about it, and basically said, well, okay, but you know, we'll have some new folks. And let's not scare them all away, I think was in essence, and hopefully we won't. But Taigen and I both agreed that you know, we're adults here, and we all deal with pain. And let's stop ignoring it and pretending that it's not there because, you know, to tell you the truth, nobody likes to talk about pain. I don't like to think about it. Has anybody here never experienced pain? Raise your hands. No? Shocking. No hands. I think we can all agree on one thing. Pain sucks. Nobody likes pain. I was sitting outside yesterday kind of going over my notes, and a server came up and asked if I was a writer, and I said, well, actually, I'm preparing for a talk, and she asked me what about, and I said pain, and this look of like shock and horror across her face, like, why would anybody want to talk about pain, much less listen about it? And so I want to talk about some of the lies that we tell ourselves and that others tell us, and that our society tells us about pain. And I want to talk about pain as a reality. And kind of one way to look at, to kind of jump into the first one is, I'm looking out here and thinking, why the hell am I giving this talk? You know, there are others here I know that deal with chronic pain much more than I do, who deal with deep emotional pain, psychological pain more than I do. But it's part of a deeper lie that says only those who have reached a certain threshold get to talk about it. My pain isn't important. My pain isn't real. Other people have it worse than I do, and therefore I don't get to look at my own pain. And we cheat ourselves. And we lie to ourselves, and we end up suffering much more than we need to. Your pain counts. My pain counts. We get to feel it. And you don't have to earn the right to feel it. One of the things that I've said often in the past, and that I hear a lot of other people say, is, Well, I can't really complain. Other people have it worse than I do. And to that, I call bullshit. It's not a comparison. This is not a competitive sport. For example, you know, it used to be you hear people say a lot, well, think about the children in India or the starving children in China or the people in Africa who are suffering much worse. Well, you know what? They've done studies of relative happiness, and people in India are just as happy as we are. In fact, poor people in India are happier than poor people in the United States. So the idea that poverty or pain is correlated or the same or the cause of suffering is not true. The Buddha himself had a childhood with almost no pain. He was raised, at least the stories are, in wealth, where everything he wanted was always there. And yet, he went on a path to discover reality, and the basis of his teachings that are still with us 2,500 years later are all based in suffering. Did he earn the right to talk about it? Yes, because he got to the bottom of his own pain. And so when I talk about the Dharma Gate, and I'll talk about what a Dharma Gate is, but it's what we're talking about today is just simply getting to the bottom of whatever you're experiencing, and that can include pain. Let's start with what we all know and share. We all sat a sitting this morning of Zazen. And some of you may be like me, every once in a while you may get a little bit of pain when you're sitting Zazen. I don't know if anybody else has experienced this. Maybe a sore knee, maybe a back, some shoulders that get tight. Zazen is a wonderful opportunity for us to experience that pain. And like I said, pain sucks. We're not here to create pain. We're not trying to increase our pain. But pain is reality. You will experience it. If you sit long enough, you will have pain. And so what are you going to do with that? One thing is run away. And, you know, I don't blame anybody who doesn't come back for a second time. I understand. But for those of us who are crazy enough to actually be back here, we've obviously already worked with it in some way. And the way that I have dealt with it, and let me say, I'll leave some time at the end for all of us to discuss, and I want those of you who have a different take on things or different thoughts to bring them forward, and maybe I've missed something. But one thing that I bring is just simply awareness. And I think that can be understated because it's the opposite of what we tend to do. When pain comes up, we want to run away. And so we avoid it, we shift postures, we do things. But the problem is, if you're doing a 3-day sitting, a 5-day sitting, a 7-day sitting, you can only shift so much. Unless you're going to start doing the worm on your, you know, zabuton or, you know, rolling around. At some point, you got to sit still and just allow the pain to be there. But when we become aware of it, we can do this amazing thing, breathe. And when we breathe, and we breathe into pain, that soreness in your knee, whatever it may be, it loosens. And I'm almost to the point where I believe that tightness and pain are almost synonymous. Because they certainly don't get along very well. They get along very well. Opening up, relaxing, allowing blood to flow, allowing breath to come, being open and loose helps. So we become aware. And no two pains are the same. And it feels like it may be the same, and we label it pain, but we believe it's all the same because we keep running away from it. We haven't actually experienced it. You've got the pain, but you're not really experiencing it. When you get into that little pain, the soreness in your knee, look at it. Not literally, but just bring your mind there. Be aware of it. You'll find that there's energy in it. You'll find, for me, it's not in one place. It moves. It radiates out. It comes back in. It moves from different parts. It may be very close to each other, but it's not a solid thing. Pain is not one thing. It is a system. It is moving. It is a mode. It is an energy that's always moving. And when we become aware of it, we can bring something else that's wonderful, curiosity. Oh, I didn't know that. Look at what that pain is doing right now. That curiosity is a wonderful thing to bring to any sort of pain, physical pain, emotional pain, psychological pain. But with awareness and curiosity, we get something that we can do that helps a lot, which is that we don't actually deal with the pain, we deal with what comes before it. So what I've found is if I'm sitting and pain starts to come up and I realize it after it's full bore pain, it's really hard. For me, oftentimes it's been too late. I can't work with it then. But if I start sitting and say 10 minutes in, 15 minutes in, I start to feel a little bit of an ache and I bring attention to it then, when it's still not so bad, then I can start working with it and be aware of it. And by working with the precursor of it before it becomes full-blown pain, it helps it to not get to a place where it's unmanageable. So we work with the pre-pain sensations, but we also work with the pre-pain mind. That is, our mind deals with pain and it labels it as pain, and we discriminate as pain is bad, I don't like it, and so I'm going to run from this. But if we work with our mind before it makes that discrimination, before it says this is pain, this is terrible, it's helpful. I'm not saying this is going to work all the time. Like I said, pain sucks. But these are some ways that we can work to at least work with those early on before they start taking over. So let's talk about some of those lies. By bringing that awareness, by bringing that pre-discriminating mind's mentality to it, we can realize that pain does not necessarily equal suffering. We see that energy before it arises. And I'm using pain and suffering more or less interchangeably here because I'm lazy. And I'll just admit that. If I was going to be precise about this, I would use pain in one exact way and suffering in another. But there is a difference. So excuse me if I don't always use them just right. But there's this belief that if I could just get rid of this pain, everything would be okay. And we get in this cycle where we feel the pain, we tighten up, we're afraid of it, we're feeling like it controls us, we don't control it. That creates more pain, more fear, and we just get in this horrible cycle. If we can see suffering as separate from pain, and see the pain as just simply those sensations that we don't have to take up, then we realize that the suffering is separate from it, and that there is a lie to saying, if I could just get rid of this pain, everything would be okay. If I could just get rid of this ache in my knee, I could sit here forever, life would be wonderful. And the truth is that it doesn't work that way. You can sit for a long time and have no physical pain, and something else will come up. I remember my second sitting. I sat on the cushion, and that first sitting, I just had all this anger pop up. And I was thinking about people in my life and just all this anger at them. And I started thinking about like my second grade teacher, I swear the sweetest woman on the face of the earth, and I just had all this anger about her. And it was just this sort of free-floating anger, and no matter who I thought about, I had all this anger, no matter what I thought about, whatever situations, whatever my past, my future, just anger. And I've had the same thing with emotional pain, with psychological pain, all sorts of things. Why? Because the suffering is there, even when the pain isn't. And the suffering will find something to attach to. Your mind will create pain out of that suffering because it needs something to attach to. That's why the Buddha started and he gave the Four Noble Truths. And the very first one is there is suffering. That's the first thing we talk about. That's the first thing we deal with. That's the first thing that we need to acknowledge. And we think that the pain is going to go away and we'll be okay, but the suffering is still laying there underneath, waiting for something else to attach to. And so it will go to your relationships. It will go to your past. It will find something to latch on to. There is an old movie. Tigan, you probably remember this. Some of us old timers might. Called When a Stranger Calls. Do you remember this?
It sounds familiar, but
it was. There's a famous line from it. But anyway, the story is there's a babysitter watching a couple kids. And she's in the living room, the kids have been put to sleep, and she gets this call, picks up the phone, and somebody says, you know, have you checked on the kids? And, you know, there's sort of this banter back and forth, and she sort of laughs it off and thinks somebody is messing with her. This is back in the days of landlines, so, you know, some of you who are younger may remember those, you know, may not remember those days, but calls on the landline. This would have been late 60s, early 70s. And so she laughs it off, and then gets another phone call. It says the same thing, and another, and she starts freaking out. She calls the police. The police say, well, okay, we're going to tap your lines. This was every movie and, you know, detective drama back in the day had this. We'll tap the lines. You got to keep the person on the phone long enough, and we'll trace where it's coming from. So talks to him on the phone, keeps him on the phone long enough, hangs up. And then right after there's a call, picks up the phone, it's the police. The phone calls are coming from inside the house. Get out. And, you know, and the killer or whatever, the caller was inside the house. And that's a long way to go for a simple metaphor, I admit. But we think that our pain comes from outside of us. If only so-and-so hadn't said that. If only my knee didn't hurt. If only. We think that the phone call is coming from outside of our own minds. But it isn't. It's coming from inside. Like I said, we blame others. We get anger about them. We tighten up. We feel pain about it, then that leads to more blame, to more tightening, to more anger, and we've created this cycle. But if we can acknowledge that the pain, even on the physical level, the neurons are firing. And so we allow our prior pain to create new pain, to make our pain worse. Taigen has given or told the story of Zhao Zhao and washing your bowl. And I think it's apt here. And, you know, I think one potential way of looking at it is to deal with pain. And that the story is that a monk comes and visits Zhao Zhao's temple and meets with Zhao Zhao and asks Zhao Zhao, I've just arrived, give me some guidance. And Zhao Zhao says, have you had breakfast yet? The monk says, yes. And Zhao Zhao says, go wash your bowl. When we experience our life, when we're new someplace, when we have a new experience, you know, we're open. But then once we've had that experience, it tends to carry over. We eat out of our bowl, but we leave stuff behind. Sort of like, you know, if when we do orioki here, we have sittings for a long time. Sometimes we'll have meals here, and we'll have our bowls of food, and then we wash it out with water and pour it out. But sometimes, at least for me, I don't wash it quite as well as I should have. And sometimes lunch ends up tasting like breakfast. Sometimes it ends up tasting like breakfast from 2 days ago, because I haven't washed the bowl very well. When we have pain, we tend not to wash our bowl. It carries over to the next experience of it. When we have a bad experience with our parents, it tends to spill over into our next romantic relationship. When we have pain in one way, it tends to color our next event of it. And we think, I didn't deal with pain, I hated it before. This experience reminds me of that, and so I believe it's going to be just like the last time. And we get in this cycle where we never escape it because we never actually feel this pain. We're feeling the last pain and the pain before that and the pain before that, but never this one. And so with each experience, each moment, we wash our bowl. That's our practice. We use up all of that old stuff and we come back. And sometimes what's new in our bowl is an old experience, but we're experiencing it again. And that's okay too. It doesn't have to be brand new pain. Sometimes I'll realize, you know what? That person who hurt me in the past, I now see a new way that that person hurt me. And so I'm going to go back and I'm just going to be there with that new pain from an old event. And then we burn that up. We wash that bowl. It's like building a fire. You can stoke it so that you like pile it up. You don't give it a lot of oxygen and it will burn very slowly. Or you can give it a lot of oxygen, throw all the fuel on there all at once and let it just go. And with pain, we tend to stoke it, to cover it up, to let it just be there underneath and fueling us in a way that's not always healthy. And so, I know I'm mixing metaphors here, but we wash our bowl, we burn off that fuel, we need to be there completely with it. So, we tend not always to deal with pain in productive ways. There's a number of ways that we can be unproductive with it. But when we talk about sort of our struggles with this practice and the age-old way that we don't deal with things very well, we talk about greed, hate, and delusion, or attachment and aversion and ignorance. We have different terms for this. But it comes down to a few ways of not dealing with things very well. And one, like I said, is we call aversion. And that's the running from it. I don't like this pain. I'm going to avoid it. And it's sort of like, I don't know if any of you have had a dog. I had a very large mastiff. And she was the sweetest thing ever. Scary as anything. She was big, strongest dog I've ever been around. She once accidentally pulled my shoulder out of joint. Not a small dog. So one day she was still kind of puppyish. She was probably about a year old, weighed about 85 pounds. She was about that close to the ground. And when she would stand up on the window, she was about 6 feet tall. And I decided, we were out in the yard. I decided I would play with her. So I decided, to get her attention, and I started running to get her to chase me. And I was about halfway around the yard, and I turn around, and oh crap. Here's this, her head was as big as mine. Here's this head right there, and she's leaping at me. I thought she was going to do some serious damage. Thankfully, she had much better body control than I did. But she did manage to get her one of her paws on my shirt pocket and completely ripped it off. But the faster I would run from her, the faster she would chase me. But she never really attacked me. She never just jumped on me. She would just follow me around. And on our theme of overwrought metaphors, we do the same with pain. You know, we run from the pain, and the pain is more than happy to chase us. It thinks it's a game. It doesn't know that we're actually trying to get away. And so the pain just comes chasing after us like a dog. And if we can stop and experience the pain and be there with it, then the pain will pass eventually, or we'll work with it. But we'll never escape it by running from it. And that's not to say we don't take pain medication. That doesn't mean that we don't take drugs to help psychological states, emotional states that are painful. Like I said, and let me get back to this, pain sucks. No one here is saying pain is a good thing that we should increase for its own sake. However, you'll never completely escape it. We've all experienced it, and we will again. And so by accepting the pain that is there, we can work with it. We can also fall into delusion, and we become deluded about it. We think that there is this fixed self, this fixed thing of pain, and that it will never change. And so what we end up doing is dealing with pain in unhealthy ways. My dad used to have a saying that some people would rather be right than happy. And sometimes we would rather suffer than give up control, give up the idea that we're correct. We would rather suffer than just be present with the moment or accept that we could be wrong. But by starting to say, okay, maybe I'm not right here. Maybe I'm going to be open to this moment. Maybe I'm going to let my deluded mind fall away. Maybe I will accept that I'm not in control here. Maybe I'll accept that. Then we can find greater happiness. But a lot of the suffering that comes with fighting it, with the requirement that we be right, we'll let go. And then finally, we have attachment. And it may seem strange that people would become attached to pain, but I think we've all seen it. There's a lie out there that pain in itself will ennoble us. That just simply experiencing a lot of pain that will be somehow better people. We'll have, like I said before, earned the right to talk about it. I've known lots of people experience a lot of pain who just are bitter, angry people. There's no requirement that pain ennoble you. Working with pain can be very useful. But there's an illusion that I should just accept pain or just, you know, just take pain and grab onto it. Second one is, I'm going to suffer for others. Well, you know, people out there are in pain. If I'm not in pain with them, then I'm doing something wrong. I'm getting out too cheaply. They did a study of Holocaust survivors, people who were in concentration camps. And they did interviews with them years, decades after they had gotten out. And then they talked with their loved ones. Interesting thing they found. The people who had been in the concentration camps were better able to move on, to adapt, and to actually forgive the Nazis who had kept them prisoner than their loved ones. Their children were still angry. years, decades later, long after those who had actually suffered had let it go. We have to find a balance there. We can't cheapen the pain of others. We can't say, okay, I won't be compassionate. But true compassion is also being compassionate for all those involved. And we don't have to hang on to the pain for somebody else. And I think a third way that we hang on to pain is it becomes a part of our self-definition. I'm the survivor, or I'm the person in pain. And we get stuck there. We get stuck with that tightness. And rather than seeing ourselves as the constantly changing, evolving, beautiful, open people that we are, we see ourselves as these stuck, pain-inhabited folks. And we can say, yes, it's ennobling, or yes, this and that. But the truth is that we're just, again, not cleaning our bowl. We're taking that past pain and allowing it to color this pain. And so while we can define ourselves by saying, yes, I'm a person who's been through pain, and I think we each can say that, we also have to be open to who am I this second? What is the pain I'm experiencing this moment? Not what did I experience, how did I deal with it before, how am I going to deal with it in the future? What does it feel like now? And that self-definition then can fall away because we really don't need it. So let me get back to what I started with, or that I promised I would talk about, which is the Dharma gate of pain. What is a Dharma gate? Well, after I shut up, we're going to chant four Bodhisattva vows, one of which is that Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. And there's lots of different definitions and uses of the term Dharma gate out there. But I think of it as simply a method for seeing reality. And we say that Dharma gates are boundless because every moment we have an opportunity to see reality as it is. And to enter a Dharma gate is to simply use this moment to see reality in a more true way. And pain can be a tool. And how we deal with it is our Dharma gate, is our method for seeing truth and reality. It gets back to what I was saying before, and I'll quote St. Bartholomew here, who said, "Many of us spend our whole lives running from feeling, with the mistaken belief that you cannot bear the pain. But you have already borne the pain. What you have not done is feel all you are beyond the pain." So when we enter this Dharma gate, what we say, what we leave on the front side of that is the lie we tell ourselves that I cannot deal with this pain. And we step through that Dharma gate and we realize I've already dealt with the pain. That pain has nothing more that it can do to me. Everything from here on out is what I do with that. And so I'm going to bring curiosity and openness to those feelings, whatever type of pain it is, emotional, psychological, physical. But when we accept it, when we hold that pain with an open hand and just allow it to be, we can see it at those deeper levels. We can see it at the deeper levels like I was talking about before, where we start with the physical pain and then we let go of that and then we see the psychological pain underneath it. We see the anger underneath it. We see the self-loathing underneath it. We see the angst, the existential worry, the realization, I'm going to get old if I'm lucky. I'm going to get sick. I will die. And we can deal with the pain of that realization and realize again, we go back to, we've already experienced it. We've already felt it. Now what can I do with this? Pain is a gateway to ultimate reality, just like each moment is a gateway to it. There's the old, some of you may be familiar with this from the story of the Odyssey. There is the great ancient Greek myth, or actually based in reality, of the rocks of Scylla and the whirlpool of Charybdis. That's how I pronounce it. I won't give you the, you know. You may pronounce it differently. But in the Odyssey, there's a story of Odysseus sailing between them. And rather than the rocks of Scylla, there was a monster, I believe, that grabbed some of the sailors. But it actually goes way back before Homer. And I think Homer actually missed it. I think this is a story that works at a very deep level that all of us can relate to, and is a very Buddhist concept. That on one side we have these rocks that catch us. And on the other side we have a whirlpool that sucks us in. And you can't really just sail down the middle between them, because unless you're on the rocks, stuck on the rocks, the whirlpool will suck you in. Well, in Buddhist terms, we call this the relative realm and the absolute realm, or this moment, or this reality, or discriminating mind and emptiness, or ultimate mind, or however you want to call it. I don't want to get caught on terms, but let's get this real. We've got these rocks of attachment and aversion of our everyday mind, the mind that's very useful. It got you here today. It got you on the train or behind your wheel. It is the everyday part of our life that we go through and that we spend most of our time in. And then there's this other realm that we sometimes experience in Zazen, where we feel the emptiness of reality, where we see that this is not all that there, that this reality, this momentary reality, is not all that there is. And it's like a whirlpool. A whirlpool, there's nothing there. It's a vacuum. It's just a pattern. It's the way that the water moves. And we're the same way. We think there's a fixed thing here that is me. And really, I'm just constantly changing. If I look at a picture of myself from when I was 5, I don't look anything like it. There isn't a cell in my body that was there and present when I was 5 years old. There is nothing in me that was there when I was 5. And yet, I'm still Roy. We carry that identity with us forward, just like a whirlpool keeps its center even though there's nothing fixed and permanent and abiding there. And we can get stuck in either. I wanted to read a real quick snippet from The Hidden Lamp, which many of you I know have read or are familiar with. Called The Woman in Samadhi. Long ago, Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, went to a gathering of Buddhas. By the time he arrived, all had departed except for Shakyamuni Buddha and a woman who was seated in a place of highest honor next to the Buddha, deep in meditation. Manjushri asked the Buddha, "Why can a woman sit beside the Buddha when I cannot?" Ignore the sexism there. Well, don't ignore the sexism there. The Buddha replied, "Just bring her out of samadhi and ask her yourself." So the samadhi, this is the state of emptiness that we can sometimes enter in Zazen, this whirlpool of emptiness. Manjushri circled the woman 3 times, snapped his fingers, raised her up to the Brahma of heaven, and employed all his supernatural powers, but he was unable to bring her out of samadhi. The Buddha then said, "Even 100,000 Manjushris wouldn't be able to bring this woman out of samadhi. But down below, past 1,200 million lands as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges River, there is a bodhisattva called Delusive Wisdom who will be able to awaken her. At that very moment, delusive wisdom emerged from the ground and paid homage to the Buddha. Then he went before the woman and snapped his fingers once. At this, the woman emerged from samadhi. So what the heck is that about? So we tend to think of this emptiness, this lack of pain, this lack of discriminating mind as being this wonderful thing that we aim for. But here in the story, this woman is stuck in it, as we can get stuck in it. And it's through the relative realm, through delusion, through attachment, through aversion, through a bodhisattva, sort of divine, demigod kind of being of delusive wisdom, that she's brought out of this emptiness, this whirlpool, and brought back to the present. Because emptiness, because samadhi, because zazen, as good as it can feel sometimes, is not the answer. But we've all seen, I think, in our daily lives, that just living our life without thinking about anything beyond it, just going from painful experience to painful experience, isn't really a good way to live either. And so in this practice, what we do is we dive headlong into both, emptiness and this moment, into the pain of this reality and into the emptiness. And so we go forward inch by inch, moment by moment, stuck on pain and pulled by the whirlpool of emptiness. And we cannot let go of pain, because even if we did, we would just be stuck in something else. And so we allow ourselves to be stuck in both at the same time. Each moment aware, each moment in emptiness, each moment in pain, each moment in the relative world. This stuckness right here is Buddha mind. Nothing beyond it. This is not some Hollywood kind of escape from pain. That, oh, okay, yeah, we've got our hero who moves beyond it, who overcomes it, and pain is vanquished somehow. There's no meaning in the Hollywood sense in pain. But how we work with this moment is just that. How we work with this moment. And how we accept our reality as it is. And how we transform this reality. Whereas Kenji Miyazawa, Japanese poet, said, we must embrace pain and burn it as fuel for our journey. So let me open this up to everybody for questions, for thoughts, for your own experiences, with the idea that I don't wish for you freedom from pain, because I think that would be a cruel thing to wish on somebody. I wish that from pain you would experience freedom, or that you would experience freedom right in the middle of your pain.
I just have this recurring problem, this thing where I just become overwhelmed, because for me, the greatest pain is injustice and unfairness. And, you know, I understand that you can only help, you know, one person at a time, you know, but like I was at a family get together yesterday, and we were talking about knee pain, and it just brought it back to me. My sister-in-law was complaining about like knee pain, and then it's like I feel like I have to solve her problem, and I'm like over here trying to tell her about, you know, an orthopedic specialist that I have, and you know, and I'm always trying to like figure out how to solve other people's problems, and sometimes that can become overwhelming. And it's like I know that I used to work with someone, and she had the same problem that I did, and she's like, people tell me their problems, and I'm always trying to try to help them solve their problems, because she's talking about the knee pain, and then I feel all this pain because she has the knee pain, and I just have that. I know you can only help, you can't help everybody, you know, but sometimes I just feel like I'm overwhelmed, you know, but you can only help one person at a time, but a lot of times I just feel overwhelmed.
Yeah. I think that when we experience other people's pain, we start, I think we tend to go to what I would call a cheap compassion. And it can be a sort of feeling like, well, I know what's wrong with this person. I'm in a better place than they are. And so I'm going to feel empathy for them. And I think that it gets us off on the wrong foot immediately.
I don't feel that, though, personally.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying you do. But I think that where we start with is to really respect that the person has the answers within themselves to their own life, and we can't tell them what they should want or what they shouldn't want. And
I was just talking about like helping, you know, other people. You know, and so a lot of times, because you're describing something that I'm not, you know, thinking in my mind. But anyway, go ahead. You know, it's just like you feel like you always have to help, you know, other people, and what you're describing seems kind of like an arrogant. I'm getting kind of like an arrogant thought that what you're thinking, like when other people, because pity is different than empathy, because when people have pity on others, they're coming from a higher position and they think that the right person is like inferior to them, but empathy, you feel the same way. And so I'm just, you know, I'm feeling like, you know, the empathy.
Right. And I think that is what I'm trying to, I think we're coming at it from the same perspective, in that we can only allow others to be on their path. At the same time, that does not mean, though, that we don't have concern and compassion for others, but we have to let them know, let us know first what they're really experiencing and not project our own issues onto them.
Well, part of what I was feeling when you were talking, though, is when we're willing to admit our own pain, then we're more available to just be empathetic with other people and hear their pain as well, and that's helpful without trying to fix anybody's problems, just to be present with others. But maybe other people have comments on or questions for Roy. Yes, Kathy.
Roy, thank you for this STEM talk. I think it's very pertinent. I personally think talking about pain in this setting is important because I think what we do does bring it up for people, and then if there's no forum to talk about it, I think people get stuck or feel don't know what to make of it. But I think, you know, it really speaks to me, and I, when I think of, you know, sometimes I can get in a bad mood and I'm just kind of grousing and you know, eventually, you know, when I finally see myself in the mirror, so to speak, it's like I am forced to think, oh, what's going on with you? You know, where did you, you know, you're not out of sleep, or you, somebody pissed you off, what's going on? It's like when I face it and deal with it, then I am in a better place to figure it out, do what something needs to be done, or just acknowledge. It does allow me to move through it and go on. You know, I the metaphor I thought of a lot in yoga is, I don't know if any of you have done Ashtanga yoga, but you go through a sequence of moves and you continually do a vinyasa flow, break up movements with a vinyasa flow. So the idea is that you're resetting in a way. You know, it's like you take different positions which make you asymmetric, and then you come back to this one vinyasa flow, which is your, I don't know which, but anyway, it is kind of like you're cleaning the slate for the next thing, and I do think that sort of idea is important. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I thought what you had to say, Roy, was really interesting. One of the most interesting parts of it, I think you're correct that there's, you know, there's a lot of switch between the terms pain and suffering, but I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about, you know, the way that the sort of underlying suffering will find things to sort of jump out and connect to. And, you know, and then on the other hand, you're talking about, you know, sort of explaining or exploring, being curious about sort of just the phenomena associated with pain. And then towards the end, you know, pain in the sort of different sense, pain is something that suffering can attach to. And then at the end, you talked about the sort of insubstantiality of self. And so to me, the question becomes, how do we use our exploration of these phenomena, pain, so on, as the Dharma gate to sort of see through, to undo the suffering by seeing through the source of that suffering, which is ultimately this misapprehension of what it means to be whatever kind of beings we are. Because if you can do that, then all the things that present themselves as a problem, the classical present themselves as a problem, you know, sickness, old age, and death, you start to see, well, there's, you know, that doesn't mean that the universe is screwed up somehow. It somehow means that there's a misapprehension going on here. So I wonder if you could just make that linkage a little more, how we move from, you know, our curiosity about pain to a different understanding of what it means to be human or whatever.
Yeah, and thank you. That's a really good question. I think a lot of that has to be experienced physically. So what I mean is that one of our basic understandings is that nothing is fixed and abiding. And we have this illusion that I am a fixed being. Just like we have an illusion that this pain is fixed. It's in one place. It's always going to feel the same. Every pain is unique. Each moment that pain is unique. You can see it move when you pay attention to it. And so it is not fixed and abiding, and we are not fixed and abiding. And so we get locked into this sense of I am me, and I am fixed, and I am this thing. And it's amazing the amount of suffering that comes out of that. And that may, I haven't really thought about this, but that may be the underlying suffering that's looking to attach to everything else. You know, but I think that, yeah, we think that pain leads to suffering, when really, suffering is the state that's there, and it's just plucking out whatever we give it to attach to. And we can call it pain in whatever way we want. Does that kind of speak to
it? I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a sense in which you were talking about the way we solidify pain and the way we solidify everything. But it's not an accidental thing or just an incidental thing that we solidify a sense of self. I think that the whole project of solidifying the world is precisely so that we can solidify a sense of self. And that is precisely, I think, according to Buddha's teaching, is what causes this whole cycle of greed and illusion that runs samsara.
Right.
So thank you. I mean, that would help.
So thank you. On that note, maybe we'll close. And I just want to appreciate your painful talk, that we need to face this, and this is actually the first noble truth of Buddhism, is that there is suffering. And I'll just add that, you know, you mentioned these two terms, and of course they're related, but suffering also just is not necessarily just pain, but just that things are not as we might wish, and that's painful too. And so they're related, and our practice is to see through that and to admit that, as you talked about, to face that. So we face all of the realities of our life, and that is the great Dharma gate that allows us to open up to being who we can be. So thank you very much, Roy. We'll close with the four vows, including about the Dharma gates, that are on the white card that was passed out, which we chant three times.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.